Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. And we're at the Bryce Jordan Center where Penn State will take on Northwestern tonight here at the BJC. And okay. Tonight, Penn State, Northwestern, 8 o'clock, 7:30 the airtime. And, of course, we're on from Damon's tonight from 6:05 to 7. We also have wrestling coming up tonight, okay? We also have wrestling coming up tonight, all right? So we have that for you here locally as well. A guy that has covered everything about Penn State forever, actually longer than I have, 2 years longer than me, and that is Neil Riddell. I'd like to bring in my longtime friend, my good friend, Neil Riddell from the Altoona Mirror. Neil, welcome. Great to have you with us. Oops, we have a technical difficulty evidently getting Neil in there. And my apologies for that. Huh. And
we'll regain our connection here to Steve Jones at the Bryce Jordan Center. As Steve said, wrestling coming up tonight here on WKOK. It is, Shikellamy and Shamokin coming up tonight. And by the sound of the horn, we're back at the BJC.
Well, my apologies. I've been trying to get Neil on board here for this part and have not been able to. So my apologies on that. So sorry about that, but we'll try to get him in maybe a little bit later in the show, but my apologies for that, guys. That one's on me. We'll try and get that one back in here at some point. But, Kevin, you certainly, have a Notre Dame. I mean, did they take the national championship now? They declare themselves national champs?
No, I don't think they can because it's only one part of a six-part system in the BCS. So I don't think they can officially become the national champion. But one particular part of that does have Notre Dame as number one. And we talked about that the first hour. There's six different parts of the BCS computer rankings in the one poll. Matrix poll is called the Colley Matrix poll. It basically factors in, as it would appear, wins and losses, and because of that, doesn't factor in margin of victory. Notre Dame's still number one in that poll, which really goes back to something that I've said for several years that I've quoted Keith Jackson: the BCS has one too many letters in it.
Right.
And I am very happy to see it's going to be done on the field finally. Even though it may not be the total amount of teams we all want to see, at least it's going to be done on the field somewhat.
Right. Yeah, that's what we all hope for. That's why the semifinal thing, we're going to get a better game out of all this. Okay? We're going to get a better game out of this down the road because of the semifinals. The fact there'll be less time, you'll have teams with automatic momentum going into it. That's why you have better, for example, better playoff games and so forth. So, I mean, you know, in the NFL, where they go week to week like that, that's why the 2 weeks in between the championship game and the Super Bowl has always been kind of a problem.
But you've been a part of bowl games for many, many years and seen the situation. I want your perspective on how teams handle that long layoff. I mean, for Penn State, there was almost, 6 weeks at one point between games, between the end of the regular season and a bowl game?
Yeah. Well, Joe would get them down to the bowl. First of all, he got them down to the bowl site early, like December 19th, somewhere around there. They'd really do a lot of heavy lifting in that first week and themselves back in the swing, and then they get into a game week routine the second week. That's what they did. And people say, why go down early? Well, you can practice here if you want, all right? You can practice here. That's no big deal. But at the same time, when you know you talk about practicing here, you still have to put them up at a hotel. What's the difference? So you might as well practice down there, where they've got, you know, where you're going to be in a hotel anyway, and you can accomplish more in a warmer weather situation. All right? I mean, that's as simple as that.
Well, because of the situation, both teams couldn't get there until late after the first bowl game had ended. So they were down there maybe maybe a week before. I'm wondering, did the – you mentioned it too when we were doing some interviews from Miami, the humidity and the weather in Miami. I wonder if that had some effect on some of the Notre Dame players as well. Not coming up with an excuse, but I'm just wondering.
I don't know. I think the better team just playing one. They have better athletes across the board. Notre Dame couldn't match up with them and strategically had it all wrong. I think that had a lot to do with it.
I came across something rather interesting, too. ESPN did a little straw poll for ESPN.com of Player of the Year, and Mike Muscala ended up getting a vote in this.
Well, he should. He should get a vote in this. This is a good basketball player. Look at what he's done so far this year with and against great competition. Dave Paulson has really put his team through a very tough, rigorous schedule. And I think that it shows in the development of Mike as to what he's been able to do. And I've been impressed by that. And that's why Northwestern has played as well as they have played. I mean, not Northwestern. Bucknell's played as well as they've played. They have good floor balance. Ayers is good. Johnson's really good. I'm a big Bryson Johnson guy. But Muscala is the guy that makes all of it go the same way Cody Zeller makes all of it go with Indiana. And it's not a stretch between the two. Okay, Zeller's a really good free-throw shooter. Mike's a really good free-throw shooter. Zeller's a really good passer out of the post. Muscala's a good passer out of the post. All right, Kevin will take you through the next 10 minutes or so. We'll come back with more from the Jordan Center in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
While your favorite team is driving down the field, you're driving all around looking for a new car, which is driving you crazy. Well, Sunbury Motors makes buying a new car easy with a huge inventory and lots of choices. Our North 4th Street Auto Plaza is stocked full of Ford, Lincoln, and Hyundais. We sell over a couple hundred cars a month. Why? Service and price. With our lowest price promise, if you can find a better price and another dealer on the used car you want, we'll beat it. That's a promise. Shop the largest Ford dealership online 24/7 at sunburymotors.com. Let's stop in and test drive Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury and our Kia dealership at Routes 11 at Tackle. The largest inventory and our lowest price promise. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers since 1915. Sunbury Motors. SunburyMotors.com. The winning team.
Hi, I'm Rick Weibel from RAW Financial. I strive to take an eagle-eye approach to your financial future to help give you the freedom to make powerful decisions. I work with you to help you find the discipline you need to get the results you want. I don't believe in just setting it up and letting things go. I'll always be looking to see how we can make things better. RAW Financial is an independent company committed to the highest standards of integrity, ethics, and value throughout your financial journey. See us in Lewisburg and Brook Park Farm. Call 800-609-9484 or visit us online at rewfinancial.com.
Welcome back to the Steve Jones Show. We'll have Steve coming back in the next few moments from the Bryce Jordan Center. Don't forget, coming up later on this afternoon, or excuse me, early this evening, I should say, it will be the Coach's Show. That'll be coming up at 6:05 here on WKOK. And then it's high school wrestling on WKOK. While the Penn State Nittany Lions take on Northwestern tonight, it'll be Steve Williams and Phil Lockoff in Shamokin as the Indians take on the Shikellamy Braves. Braves basketball team in Shamokin a couple of nights ago on Tuesday night, remaining undefeated in the Pennsylvania Heartland Athletic Conference Division I and setting themselves up for a showdown with Danville and the Weddy McCluskey Center on Tuesday. But in between, tomorrow night, the Braves have a very interesting matchup with Milton. You know, the Shikellamy-Milton have seen some really amazing games over the last 10, 15 years, and Milton has struggled a little bit the last couple of years, but they're one of those teams that you just can't take lightly. And that's something Shikellamy and their player, the team itself, learned the other night at Shamokin. The Shamokin, again, a team that was struggling with only a couple of wins, a nip and tuck all the way until about the last minute and a half to 2 minutes of the ball game when Chickalamy was able to get out about a 10-point win. But Milton, again, another one of those scrappy teams that just look for opportunities left and right. And if they can come up with those opportunities and this game stays close, that is something that Milton would love to have. And Chickalamy, as Tim Forrest said many times, does not like losing Heartland Conference games, but you don't like losing those games at home. And the way Danville's playing and the mix of players that they have, I'll tell you what, they have just reloaded year after year at Danville. You just can't afford to lose a game here and there in the conference. So that's, again, coming up Friday night here on WKOK, tomorrow night with a 7:06 airtime. Again, that is on WKOK and WKOK.com. I want to take a couple of minutes now. We have talked about this when it first happened, and we've talked about concussions many times here on the program. But now some discussion has come up based on some reports and some findings about Junior Seau, and that he had a brain disease of some sort that could have been linked back to his concussions. The family decided to basically donate his brain to science, for lack of a better way to describe it, and investigate this a little bit. And his brain revealed some abnormalities that are consistent with chronic, they call it CTE. I'll put it that way because it's going to be easier for me to do than pronounce it for you. But the study found that there were, you know, just parts of his brain that just ended up showing these CTE symptoms, and it's something that happens with exposure to repetitive head injuries. He's a guy that's played for 20 years in the NFL with San Diego, Miami, New England before he retired back in 2009 and then died of a self-inflicted shotgun wound. Now, there's dozens of players who were found to have CTE. Boston University's Center for the Study of Disease reported last month 34 former pro players and 9 who played only college football suffered from this. Junior Seau has a 23-year-old son who was, I understand, playing some football, and now the whole family obviously has not, says he really wasn't surprised about learning it. He played many years at the NFL level, he being Junior Seau. I was talking about his father there. He was just kind of angry that they didn't do something more and have more awareness to help him. And unfortunately, now it's just a little too late. And according to Tyler Seau and Junior's ex-wife Gina, he had wild mood swings, irrationality, forgetfulness, insomnia, and had bouts of depression as well. And that makes you sit back and wonder, especially as a parent now, with all these youth football programs around, and you know, as much as you try and keep players safe with concussion-proof helmets, which, by the way, is not concussion-proof. I mean, some helmet companies are calling it concussion-proof helmets. That's a farce, by all means. It is not really concussion-proof whatsoever. But as they try to help out a little bit and try and make these helmets a little bit better, you wonder, you know, how much of football today are we going to be able to continue to see in maybe the next 10, 15, or even 20 years from now, especially at the youth level? There's a lot of discussion at the youth level whether there should be football for children that are 8, 9, and 10 years of age. When is the proper time to be starting to play football? Do you have to wait until junior high or puberty, or do you have to wait until high school? Up in, I believe it's New England, there's a discussion of whether there should even be a football program in high school because of the injuries. And we're looking at head injuries in this particular case. I mean, there's also, debilitating injuries left and right. Penn State fans know that all too well. And there's been a lot of discussion now whether even at the high school level, if it is time to start, or that schools start looking at not having football. Now, I don't know. I think that's a little extreme. I really believe it's a little bit extreme. As a parent and as a football fan, don't get me wrong, I love every minute of it. Love every minute of football. Love watching my son play football. Do I have a fear that something's going to happen? Sure, in the back of my mind, I realize that. I knew it when I played. I knew it as a parent, and I know it from being a spectator, and it's something you definitely don't want to see. But you have to sit back and ask, you know, is the risk worth it? Now, I think in Junior Seau's case, and this is just strictly my opinion here, in Junior Seau's case, it was a situation where he played a long time and had several concussions along the way. And maybe it was before, you could make an argument and say maybe it was before we knew really what a concussion was or knew what to look for in a concussion that might have led to the amount of concussions he had and maybe to the self-inflicted gunshot wound that that he suffered and committed suicide eventually with. You have to think back and, okay, how many of those happened in college? How many of those happened in the outstanding NFL career? Were they compounded? I've seen a couple of players with concussions at the youth level and at the high school level. It does make you a little bit nervous. But is it any more dangerous than another sport? Is it more dangerous than baseball? Baseball, you're wearing a helmet, and sometimes the ball goes a little wild and from a pitcher, or maybe you're running from first to second base and you get caught in the middle of a throw and it hits you in the head, thigh, whatever, as a runner. I mean, there's risk with every sport. It's just a point of how much risk are you willing to take and how much risk is worth it. And I think that's a question right now that every football player is thinking about, every parent is thinking about, and, you know, everybody who loves a football player or a sports player in general. What is going to be, you know, worth it? Now, the other question is from a legal standpoint, the NFL. You know, what does the NFL want to do about this? What can the NFL do about it? The NFL did respond and said that they appreciated the Seau's family cooperation with the National Institute of Health. The funding underscores a recognized need for additional research to accelerate the understanding of CTE. And they went on to say that the NFL, both directly and in partnership with the NIH and the Center for Disease Control and other leading organizations, are committed to supporting a wide range of independent medical and scientific research that will both address CTE and promote the long-term health and safety of athletes at all levels. As a matter of fact, the NFL, through its teams, have committed $30 million to the National Institutes of Health to try and help out. But again, a lot of lawsuits that are going to be pending with the NFL, and what's going to happen here, and what is the future of football, not only at the NFL level, but at the youth level. Is it time to start looking at that? Again, it's one of those things that for every study, you could probably find another study that says something completely different. And then I go back to a question I just made a few minutes ago. Where do we stand with football compared to other sports? I mean, let's face it, football is controlled collisions. Other sports have their risks as well. Wrestling season, we talked about that a few minutes ago with Wrestling Tonight on WKOK. I mean, there's no protection really there. Maybe on the ears, and that's about it. Is it controlled collisions? No, but there's a lot of turning, torquing, and leverage moves. I guess the question has to be, as we've said many times on this program, where do you draw the line between safety and having athletics as a part of your life, whether it be at the college, pro, or at the high school level? And I believe, too, especially at the high school level, there's a lot of things that you can get through team sports and athletics that you'll never be able to experience in just a classroom setting. I think one of the benefits of a team sport or even an individual sport is it makes you a better time management person. And let's face it, student athletes have to get a lot of work done, a lot of homework done. They go to Jersey Shore sometimes for a 45-minute trip and have a two-hour event, then a 45-minute ride home, and it's 11 o'clock. I mean, you learn time management skills in a hurry if you want to have good grades and be able to participate as a student athlete. And again, I'm looking at this from a high school level. One of the other things I think it gives you is learning how to work together as a team. When one person doesn't completely pull the weight, someone else has to come in and pick up. And you learn quickly that if you are not going to give 100% all the way through, that somebody else is going to have to help you. I mean, in a school setting, arguably, if you don't give 100%, it's your grade that's going to suffer, not the whole class's grade that's going to suffer. If you don't give 100% in a working environment, then the working environment is going to suffer. It's absolutely going to suffer. Steve Jones back with us now from the Bryce Jordan Center.
You have to remember the history of football. Teddy Roosevelt wanted to ban
and unfortunately we got into Teddy Roosevelt and unfortunately lost a little bit of it, so we may have to come back with Steve.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. You got a few seconds here before the bottom of the hour, but go ahead.
I was just going to say, but you know, this goes back 107 years. This is not a recent thing. Teddy Roosevelt wanted the sport banned. Okay? Now we have all these protections built in. Best pads in the world, helmets, things like that. All right? The sport's more popular than ever. And what Roger Goodell has to do is be very smart about something. He can't regulate this thing into the ground and take away with the part that people love. Safety is critical, but they're tinkering a little bit too much with it right now. Much too much. Neil Riddell next half hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. We're mobile at the Sunbury Motor Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, at the Jordan Center, where Penn State takes on Northwestern tonight. Also, the Mucks are in Hilscher's General Store, 7 miles south of Sealands Grove. Hilscher's General Store, sponsor of our hotline at 1-800-795-9565. We're about to call out on it in just a few moments. To Neil Riddell, get Neil back on the line here. And, of course, today's show being brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call 800-609-9484 or go online to rewfinancial.com. We welcome in from the Altoona Mirror the veteran writer, Neil Riddell. Neil, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Well, what have you been able to take as a veteran who is connected and knows people, and what have you been able to take out of the events of the past 10 days?
Well, I think we're into clearly a new era of Penn State football. You know, we were spoiled in that we never had to hold our breath that at least the head coach, you know, may be open to offers. Or at least to be here, have heard the people out, which of course becomes public. You know, and I think obviously it's a great credit to Bill O'Brien that he did such a fantastic job in his first year, and will be in demand. You know, was this year and will be going forward. But I just think it's a kind of a new world where you know, head coaches have agents. Assistant coaches in the NFL have agents, and you know, and the agent's job is to keep his product fresh and the name out there, and you know, continuing to raise the stakes no matter how they you know, are transformed. So I think, and then when you see a defensive coordinator then leaving for another defensive coordinator position, it's just different, and I think we're going to have to get used to that. And there's, you know, I think, you know, change can be good. Obviously, we saw that at times Penn State football could have certainly used more change, but with that stability of the past, there was an upside, and, you know, we'll see what this quick transformation of a new defensive coordinator, so we'll see how that plays next year.
It's interesting. You look at the Southeastern Conference, for example. I remember Penn State going to a bowl game against Tennessee, and John Chavis was the defensive coordinator. Then, 3 years later, or actually 2 seasons later, Penn State's playing LSU, and John Chavis is the defensive coordinator within the conference. That happens in that conference all the time. Give me an idea, the surprise that you had yesterday when you found out Ted Roof was making this move from being the defensive coordinator in the Big Ten to being the defensive coordinator in the ACC.
Well, I was surprised, and I don't know, Vince. You know, I probably should interview you. You probably have more inside information than me. But we've been used to in the past. Now, what didn't totally shock me is when you look and say, okay, here's a guy that is going back to his alma mater. And he has a history of moving, and you know, a lot of these higher profile guys who are on the climb, whether it's in, you know, from what I can understand, whether it's in the top college level or the NFL, sort of position themselves, and then come December 5th, they honestly maybe aren't sure where they're going to be January 20th, but they know they're going to be maybe somewhere else. They hope they're going to be somewhere else, because that might mean one more. You know, who knew of Mike Tomlin before the Steelers hired him? So the fact that he's moving to his alma mater, I guess I do understand that. I have questions with it. I mean, because he and Bill O'Brien seem to be such good friends. So what does that mean? Does it mean that Ted Roof senses that maybe in another year or so that Bill O'Brien could be on the move? Does it mean that Ted Roof has an idea that maybe the Georgia Tech coach is under fire? And maybe he would be a favorite son being there. I don't know any of that, but it did seem odd, and it definitely seems odd when you go over the history that not much happened in recruiting. During recruiting season, it was a very stable time of Penn State football as far as keep the staff. Now, that said, is it fair for a coach to recruit kids and then leave? Now, he already sort of did that, but is it fair for him to stay through the signing day? I don't know.
John Butler then gets elevated to defensive coordinator. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I probably initially thought that maybe one of the older guys who had been around the Penn State football program, and I don't know, you know, what is all involved with that. Did they not want that? Did Bill not want that? You know, he both those guys are great coaches and proven position coaches, and Van der Linden has proven himself as a coordinator, and I think did a good job as a head coach at Maryland when you look at the shape the program was in when he left, or what he left over to, was it Friedgen, the next one?
Yeah, Ralph Friedgen replaced Ron.
Right.
In fact,
so
he actually
I don't
used
have
Ron's,
an answer to that.
He actually used Ron's talent to get to the Orange Bowl.
Yeah, so, you know, but, you know, here Butler is clearly one of Bill O'Brien's guys. He's made a number of you know, climbing moves a bunch of places. The position played well. Seems to be a guy that connects to the kids. You know, so let's see what he can do. But I guess there's been a series of curious moves.
Well, so far, and we'll see how it plays out. But, you know, by elevating, it also puts that's also a mark of stability in the staff because of elevation, correct?
Well, decisiveness, too. And I think that's one thing Bill O'Brien has really been, is a decisive coach since he's been there, whether it's play calling or personnel or even internal movement. Yeah, and here's a guy, and that's what I think that part of it's healthy, that guys are going to be on the climb, you're going to be able to get promoted. That's a good message for, you know, guys that, you know, because here now he needs a secondary coach, or has he filled that already?
I don't know. It's not filled that already.
Okay.
But the other part too is, take for example, look at Wisconsin. If they had a changeover in staff last year, including their offensive coordinator, because Paul Chryst ended up at Pitt, but they didn't fire their offensive line coach two games into the season. Right. So they I think because fans aren't used to these things, it takes them aback. But it actually is the norm at almost every other place.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are still, when you see it happening in a college setting during the season, I think something's wrong, you know. And I give Joe a lot of credit that he would take, you know, he always took the blame, and he didn't like it when people shifted that to his staff. But never would you have seen that during the season. The most kind of radical move you may have seen was when Galen all of a sudden started out on the field, and I think it was in 03 or 04.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 04. Then all of a sudden he moved to the press box about halfway through the year. You almost never saw that. It's a whole new world. But I give, you know, you touched on Wisconsin, Steve, and I was kind of following the Pitt thing when that happened, and I would have to believe that Chris has some level of regret. But I give him and Barry Alvarez a lot of credit. Barry Alvarez recommended Chris to Pitt, and being a guy from Western Pennsylvania, the fact that he didn't come right in here and raid him after a year, a Madison native, a guy that played there, I think that says something for integrity.
Oh, no, it does. And I think the people that I know that know him, and they happen to be people in Wisconsin, have praise for him as an individual, as a coach. He is not a limelight seeker. He is not... They said he's just a coach's coach, and he just loves coaching. So that part didn't surprise me. And it's, you know, but I use him as an example of that Wisconsin had turnover on their assistant coaching staff last year. That was the point I was trying to make there.
And it makes you wonder how anxious, eager Bielma was these last couple years, where you run out and you hit, you know, a home run, you know, beyond Madison to Appleton with Russell Wilson in 1 year, and then you try it again with Danny O'Brien. It doesn't look like it works, but to bring in 2 one-and-done quarterbacks in succession, what kind of message does that send to the rest of your team? Is it positive? I guess with Russell Wilson it was, but just beyond the message. And I would even ask about USC, where you bring in a star running back, or you know, in first part of August, what that do to team chemistry? I wouldn't blame everything for sure on Silas Red, but what kind of message does that send to the rest of the team?
What's it like for you covering college football now compared to when you had to cover it in the 80s and the 90s?
Well, industry obviously has changed. Everybody wants it now immediately. Let's get it up there on, you know, breaking news, and now Twitter, and so nobody has a chance to maybe really sit back and digest it and write a little bit more of a thoughtful. I still like to take a day and try to analyze it. So I think in that regard, it's different. In some ways, I kind of like a little bit of a slower pace because, you know, it gave an emphasis on the print product, which I still, you know, believe in, and, you know, we're trying to embrace all of it. You punch it up now and 8 people tweet about the same thing, and, you know, but there's different perspectives, and you can go to bed reading just like you could a magazine, and wake up reading right away. So, you know, it's been exhilarating in a sense, but it's certainly quickened the pace.
But you've, over the years, have always diversified. You've been involved in radio. You've been involved in TV. You've pushed hard on the Nitwit show, which you've gone from cable access now to over the air, as well as writing. You have always had the ability, Neil, to see what the industry was at the moment and that diversification was important for an individual. You were one of the first really to do it. What did you see years ago that made you think that was the way to go in terms of making sure you weren't just one entity?
Well, I think if you're a good communicator in the industry, that goes beyond being able to write a good story. I think, you know, when you look at, for whatnot, you see a lot of writers have gotten opportunities. So I think when you, like, again, look at ESPN, who are the real stars of the network in terms of, say, the NFL, or, you know, Mortensen and Clayton and Sal Powell, and some of these guys were all newspaper people.
And Peter King now from Sports
Illustrated. Yeah, Peter Gammons. Peter King, your Little League buddy.
My Little League buddy, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, but I think I've been fortunate to have been able to cover Penn State football a long time, and I think there's been always been such a passion for it, and we've always taken the attitude that you can't over-cover it. So the we felt like if you wrote five stories on a Sunday, people would read six. So, you know, I think we've tried to embrace that, and, you know, and that's maybe offshoot of some of that. And you see that with a lot of the guys these days. You know, everybody's doing a little stand-up after the press conference, and, you know, radio spots and TV appearances. I think that's all part of the great technology world that we're in.
The expansion, one of the things back in the 80s that we could talk about consistently was the fact that it was easy to make a road trip. Go to Syracuse, go to Rutgers, go to Temple, West Virginia, Pitt, whatever it happened to be. The addition of Maryland and Rutgers brings that element back. The pluses of that and your thoughts just on the fact that they went to 14 and that happened to be the two schools they picked.
Well, I like the idea that they are Eastern schools. I probably would prefer Pitt and West Virginia, or Pitt and Syracuse. West Virginia seems comfortable, I guess, for now in the Big 12, and I don't know that the Big 10 was going to take them.
Yeah, but you and I both know that 83% of the TVs in Pennsylvania have the Big 10 network. Pitt is not going to deliver the other 17%.
No, I understand that, but I also feel that some of the tradition of college football has been left in the wake of the pursuit of the more eyeballs and the more money,
right,
and the TV sets. And I think that's been an unfortunate product. And it, you know, it's just such a professional mentality. And I'll be, you know, I think all of us that were around Bill O'Brien this year really liked him, respected him, and enjoyed him. And I'm not speaking for everybody, but as far as I'm concerned, if he stayed 10, 15, 20 years, I think it'd be good. I think he showed us this year what he's capable of, and when he gets the other hand untied, what he's really going to be capable of. But when you see a Brian Kelly virtually go from the field to an NFL interview before he even gets to the interview room, you know, it just leaves a little taste. I don't know. It bothers me. You know, I'm not saying that he's not entitled or take care of his family, but that's the world we're in now where, hey, wait a minute, the Eagles called. Well, let's stop everything. And you know, it just kind of bothers me, especially because that seemed to be to his destination job with no sanctions. And now the minute he gets hot, that's what the response is. So I think the professionalism that has taken over the college sports, Steve, and a lot of different factors, that turns me off a bit.
Yeah, and you're right about the rivalry part. Of course I would like to see Penn State play Pitt every year. You know, of course I would. You know, just like, for example, in basketball, Indiana and Kentucky aren't playing any longer. You know, Missouri doesn't play Kansas any longer in basketball. I mean, Texas A&M doesn't play Texas anymore in
Oklahoma,
football.
Oklahoma-Nebraska.
But you know what? The odd thing about the Oklahoma-Nebraska rivalry is that the Big 12 broke that up. It wasn't the Nebraska's move because they put them in separate divisions. They moved the game to October, and there were certain times where Oklahoma rotated off Nebraska's schedule because of the divisional play. I mean, it was actually the conference that broke that rivalry up. Crazy.
Yeah, and that part of it. Now, you know, because I feel like if you're going to make a trip to Indiana, Minnesota, because there's sometimes where I've looked around and said, geez, you know, wouldn't it be nice to get in the car and drive to West Virginia, Syracuse, you know, B.C.?
Right.
For sure, Pitt. But I think the people that are east of State College don't quite get the whole Pitt thing as much as all the people that are west of State College, particularly around here, Johnstown, and definitely through the 60s and the 70s, where you had so many Altoona and Johnstown players at those schools. And, you know, I miss that.
But you know what,
Neil? Penn State has lacked a true rival.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that. That's true. But you know what? And think of this realm. Okay? If you were born in 1992, okay, which the last year was like full-time Penn State Pitt, right? You're 20 years old now.
Oh, my son. 91. Born in 91. Yeah.
Penn State Pitt have played four times in his lifetime and haven't played in 12 years.
Right, right.
And so they have no feel for it at all.
Diminished. But that's not necessarily, that may be the target fan base that they want, but it's still, their fan base is still the older demographic that would appreciate a renewal of that series, and I think they're taking steps to that, but it'll never be what it was. It won't be late in the year. It won't be annual.
Right, but it's right now at 4 years, as Dave Joyner was able to knock out something with Pitt about that. So, Neil, it is always a pleasure, as you well know, my friend. And
thank you, Steve, and I wanted to extend belated condolences to you.
Oh, Neil, thank you. Appreciate that. Very, very kind. Wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Show today brought to you by Rick Weibel and REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Give Rick a call at 800-609-9484 or visit online at REW Financial. 4th Street in Sunbury, Sonos Key, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and, of course, the Hillshoes General Store hotline at 1-800-795-9565. Mucks are in 7 miles south of Sealands Grove at Hillshoes General Store tomorrow. Guy Cipriano of the Center Daily Times will join us tomorrow. And also, we will have with us Greg Cosell from EdF Films to break down the weekend. I don't think there's anybody that can break down tape into what the deal is with each NFL playoff game than him. So Greg Cosell joins us for NFL Films tomorrow.
The only problem with that
not
is we're going to both
you like.
Well, we're both going to have the same information now, so we're going to same pick the same teams. How am I ever going to catch up?
How are you going to catch up?
Yeah.
The whole point is that you're not supposed to catch up, dude.
Oh. I'm sorry. I forgot whose name was on the program.
I don't even follow. I have no idea how many wins I have and how many I don't. I have no clue.
Oh, trust me. I know exactly how many wins I'm behind.
Oh, okay. That's fine. I'm glad you do. I don't. Not even a clue. But Greg Cosell tomorrow. And also, Guy Cipriano of the Center Daily Times. Got a big show coming up tomorrow. Looking forward to it. As we head into the weekend. Today's show brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Give Rick a call at 800-609-9484 or visit online at REWfinancial.com. Wrestling, then hoops.